Welcome. My name's Adrian Beebe, and this is the sixth in the series of podcasts about the village of Kington Langley in North Wiltshire. In this episode, I'm going to tell you the story of the last family ever to live in Kington Langley's lost medieval manor house, Fitzhurst Farm. It's gone now, demolished in the early 20th century. All that remains are fragments of masonry and gardens and properties along Parker's Lane, some depressions in the ground, and the tale of a tragedy long forgotten by villagers. It's a story I've mentioned before in this podcast, but to be frank, it's been nagging at me to do it justice. I first came across a sketchy reference to this story in Sheila Calhoun's book, The Story of Kington Langley. There are also references to it in interview notes that Joanna White kindly passed to me. Interviews with elderly village residents back in 1989 who remembered what happened all those years ago. So, in this episode, I'll tell you the story of Eli Holder and his family. I'll also tell you about a discovery I made in the village which, for me at least, lent this story a new resonance. You're listening to Memories of Kington Langley.
Episode 6, The Boy in the Moat.
There are so many places in time at which I could begin this story. References to Kington Langley's original manor house go right back to the Norman era, when Urso Fitzhurst is said to have built a dwelling on Fitzhurst Hill. That's the ridgeline just behind Parker's Lane that looks down towards the dual carriageway. In 1670, antiquarian John Aubrey visited Kington Langley and described a manor on top of Fitzhurst Hill as a very ancient built house with a great hall and moated about. But our telling of this story begins 140 years ago with the death of John Collins. It's late in the summer of 1880. John Collins is the tenant of Fitzhurst Farm, the name by which the old moated manor house is known. His business is timber. Collins has built several large sawmills on the land just south of the manor, land that will one day become housing on Parker's Lane, in which he employs many of Kington Langley's residents. Collins' death is sudden and unexpected. On the 2nd of September, 1880, the Bath Chronicle reports that an inquest has been held. According to the surgeon who gave evidence, 59-year-old Collins bled to death from a ruptured varicose vein in his leg. After his funeral, Collins's wife, Anne, takes over the running of the business, until 2.5 years later when this advert appears in the pages of the North Wiltshire Gazette.
Eli Holder, timber merchant, Kington Langley, begs respectfully to announce that he has succeeded to the business lately carried out by his sister, Mrs. Moore, lately Mrs. John Collins, and desires to assure her numerous customers it will be his earnest endeavour to merit and obtain the favour of their custom. Kington Langley Sawmills, January 1883.
So, who was Eli Holder? He was born in the small village of Slaughterford in 1845. That's 6.5 miles west of Kington Langley, between Bidderston and Ford. The village nestles deep in the wooded Bybrook Valley. In Eli's time, a large paper mill there took advantage of the river's clean waters. Today, the buildings of it are still there. Eli came from humble stock. His father was a woodsman and later a farmer of 11 acres. His siblings were dressmakers, labourers, or helped their father. 6 years earlier, his sister Anne had married John Collins and moved to live with him in Kington Langley in Fitzurse Farm. Eli had moved from Slaughterford to Killearn and married Elizabeth Beer in 1876. His profession was noted as farmer. By 1881, the couple were living at Thickwood, just outside Killearn, farming 23 acres. But 6 years later, they followed Eli's sister Anne to Kington Langley, having moved into what was called Manor Farm, probably as a tenant. Manor Farm is part of what we know today as Great House. Was their move prompted by his sister's need for help running the sawmills? It seems likely. So, in 1883, Anne transfers Fitzurse Farm and the business of the sawmill to her brother, Eli. Anne either doesn't want it or doesn't need it anymore. Although widowed 3 years ago, she's already remarried to a man called George Moore, who lists his occupation as innkeeper. It's notable in the newspaper advert that Anne places announcing the transfer that her address is given as the Bell Hotel, Malmesbury. Today, that hotel has a George Moore room. So was he its innkeeper? One quick footnote to the story. George didn't last long. He was dead by 1885, and Anne married again. It's 1883. As the proud owner of Kington Langley Sawmills, Eli, his wife, and several children move into the ancient Fitzurse Farm, with its commanding views across the valley west toward Kingston St. Michael and north towards Stanton St. Quentin, the Cotswolds rising in the far distance, and its moat fed by natural spring. He's a farmer no longer, now a timber merchant with a thriving business and his own manor to boot.
Many village men are employed at the sawmills. At one point, 9 carpenters live in Kington Langley, including Thomas Salter, who buys wood from the mills to make his coffins. For many years, the mills supply packaging cases to the Anglo-Swiss Condensed Milk Company's factory in Chippenham. That's the long building that still stands beside the river on Bath Road, just next to the bridge. On Saturday mornings, village children take carts to the sawmills to buy cheap firewood from its entrance on Fitzurse Hill. They pay the foreman at the engine house, from where the belts that drive the circular saws are powered. For Eli, things are looking up. He's come a long way from his humble beginnings in Slaughterford. A long way.
We've reached 1889. Eli has been running the sawmill for 6 years, during which time his growing family has lived in the old manor house. But now, a shadow falls over their lives. On Monday, the 1st of April, the body of Eli's 7th child, his toddler son, is found in the moat. He's drowned. At just 1 year and 9 months old. It would have been a working day at the sawmills. One can imagine the cries of alarm heard over the clatter of the machinery. Perhaps the men pausing in their work, straining at the sound of a scream. Someone, perhaps Eli himself, plunges into the cold water to carry the body of the infant back to Fitzurse Farm. Word of the child's death spreads quickly around the village. The police and the vicar would have attended the farm as the family struggled to come to terms with the horror of what's happened. Did Eli's wife blame herself for letting the child out of sight? Did Eli regret ever moving into the old manor? Just over 2 weeks later, a small death notice appears in the pages of the Wiltshire Times and Trowbridge Advertiser. April 1 at Kington Langley. George, infant son of Eli Holder, aged 1 year, 9 months. If there was an inquest, I can find no trace of it. Harry's death is registered in Chippenham, although one of the forms incorrectly calls him Henry George. There's no record of where he's buried. According to an interview in 1989 with 96-year-old villager Thurza Hawkins, Elizabeth Holder can no longer bear to live in Fitzhurst Farm. This is what Thurza said.
Eli Holder went from the manor farm to the sawmills. There was a big house there, the Moat House. It was very old and had slits for firing guns through. It had a moat all around it. One of Mr. Holder's boys was drowned there, and Mrs. Holder would not stay there any longer. Nobody lived there after that, and it went awful.
2 years later, in 1891, the official census still shows it as the family's address. They've had one more child since Harry's death, but also lost another. But by 1901, they've left Fitzhurst Farm to return to Manor Farm, although Eli continues to run his timber business. After Harry's drowning, Eli continues to play a central role in village life, including as a member of the parish council. 6 years later, he attends the wedding of his daughter, Minnie, in Kington Langley Church. By 1911, Eli is still running the sawmill. His son, Ernest, who will eventually take over the business, is now the clerk of the works. In February of that same year, the North Wiltshire Herald reports that a tramp has set fire to a stack of straw and a rick of hay belonging to Eli in a field he rents off Barbarons Lane. That's the footpath running between Newlands Green and the dual carriageway. A few years later, in 1915, Chippenham magistrates fine Eli £2 for using an unlicensed traction engine to haul timber at Bremill. Now, appearances of Eli's name in the records grow less frequent. He's entering his 70s. In July 1920, 2 years after the death of Earl Cowley, it's reported that the final sale of land once owned by the Draycott estate takes place in Chippenham before a large crowd. Eli pays £240 for the 3 acres of pasture he rented. Fitzhurst Farm in Kington Langley, it's noted, has already been disposed of, along with 29 other lots, to Eli, presumably. Notably at the same sale, one Mr. Collins from Bruton buys Langley Gate Farm and 129 acres for £7,700. He's the ancestor of James Collins, whose family still owns the farm.
Now getting on in years, Eli and Elizabeth moved to Chippenham, to No. 4 Greenway Park. It's a grand cul-de-sac adjacent to John Coles Park, full of generously proportioned architect-designed villas. The house is towards the top of the road. It's described as a desirable brick-built residential property with an entrance hall, dining room, study, kitchen, drawing room, 2 pantries, a scullery, coal house, WC, 5 bedrooms, bathroom, and a capital kitchen garden with choice of fruit trees.
In late January 1922, 77-year-old Eli collapses and dies just before breakfast. His funeral takes place at St. Paul's Church in Chippenham on the last Saturday of January. In an odd twist of fate that the Wiltshire Gazette is keen to point out, on the same date, 6 years later, and at the same age, his widow, Elizabeth, also collapses before breakfast and dies.
A notice is placed in the North Wilts Herald in June 1928, announcing the auction of their home with vacant possession, and here their story ends.
For a man who grew up the son of a woodsman, Eli Holder achieved much in his 77 years. From working on a farm in remote rural Wiltshire to becoming a well-to-do Edwardian retiree living in one of the most desirable streets in Chippenham. Curious to see Eli's final resting place, I visit St Paul's Church in Chippenham, that's the one beside the old Little George, to see if I can find his grave. I crisscross the overgrown cemetery, but frustratingly, I find no trace. Back at home, I email the church asking for help. The benefice administrator kindly replies the following day and sends me a hand-sketch plan of the graveyard. It's divided into rows of graves marked A to U. Eli's grave is number 4 in row O. The administrator warns me that his grave has no headstone, but it sits between graves in the names of Pike and Powell. Early one still warm evening in May, as the shadows lengthen, I revisit the graveyard, the drawing in my hand. Any trace of Eli's grave is gone. It's just a depression in the grass between two monuments, an absence. Sad to think that a life lived so fully 100 years ago should be so completely erased. As for the old manor in Kington Langley, Fitzhurst Farm, once it's abandoned by Eli's family, the building remains empty and falls into disrepair. It's demolished in 1906. The late Philip Bird, whom I interviewed 2 years ago, recalled that his uncle worked on the demolition.
But yes, there was the moat and the remains of the what was turned the castle, but the moat was there and a medieval barn that was all demolished and done away with after the sawmill finished. Sawmill finished early in the 1930s. Yeah, yeah. When they turned the mansion, the cottage there, now where the dentist lives.
Oh yes, yes.
That there was the cottage there, but the higher part was built from the stone from that mansion, termed the mansion. What it was, I don't know. But, and also, there's a wall alongside the road there, isn't it? That was built from the stone as well.
So, with the mansion when you were young, was it a ruin?
Oh, no, it wasn't there. It was demolished.
Oh, I see, it's gone before, right.
Yeah, but the
demolished in 1906. Uh-huh. But an uncle of mine worked on it.
The remains of the moat are filled in by the 1930s. You can see them quite clearly on old Ordnance Survey maps, right at the top of the hill above the dual carriageway. One suggestion is that wood chippings from the sawmills were discarded into the moat, gradually filling it over time. Even today, the outline of what was the moat is marked by lines of trees at the foot of the gardens. The sawmills are closed in 1930. In another interview in this series of podcasts, villager Don Elms recalled seeing the buildings during his childhood. The last vestige of Urso Fitzurse's manor is a Norman tithe barn that stands close to the sawmills. It is demolished in the 1960s, and then all trace is gone.
New houses are built on the site. The builder, Julian Bailey, has to sink deep footings into what was the moat. Another local resident believes that when his lawn dries and browns in the summer months, it reveals the rectangular outline of the sawmill's old creosote tank, in which local farmers used to dip wooden fence stakes, which leaves one final piece of the puzzle, What happened to the body of Eli's drowned son, Harry George Holder?
This puzzles me for a long time. The Holders were Church of England. The records show that all their weddings and baptisms took place in Anglican churches, many in St. Peter's and Kington Langley, but none of the family are buried there, or in Kington St. Michael. There's a very helpful listing of the graves in St. Peter's churchyard, but no Holders. I resolved to take a walk around the churchyard one evening in May to see for myself, but there's nothing. I'm deeply frustrated. I walk home across the common, deflated. It's now around 7:30 p.m. Just a few people chatting over towards Ashes Lane. As I pass the Union Chapel, I wonder whether I should have a look inside its wall. It's unlikely, I think, but I know there are a handful of graves there. It's a long shot, but I may as well. And this is when I find it. A broken cross mounted on a plinth, and a plot, most of which has run to grass. It's the third or fourth grave I examine, next but one to the west wall of the chapel's yard. Squatting, I brush aside the dirt from the inscription, in loving memory of our little child, Harry G. Holder, who passed away April 1st, 1888, aged 1 year, and 9 months, to be forever with the Lord, the boy in the moat. Of course, Eli and his wife never moved further away than Chippenham. To do so would have taken them away from their child's grave, and what parent could bear to do that? So this is where our story ends. The man has gone, Eli's gone, but Harry's grave remains. A reminder of that tragedy that took place on that April day in 1889, the beginning of the end of Kington Langley's lost manor, and a testament to how easily memory fades. If you're passing the Union Chapel and would like to visit Harry Holder's grave, it's to the right of you as you enter through the gate. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast. In order to piece together this story, I've used information drawn from the British Newspaper Archive, the genealogy website Ancestry.com, and also records from the local history website Wiltshire OPC. OPC stands for Online Parish Clerk. Sheila Calhoun's book, The Story of Kington Langley, was invaluable, as were the interviews given to me by Joanna White. This has been Memories of Kington Langley. Goodbye.